Talk Live.
Control and 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That's 603-283-6160. And with you on the show tonight, you've got me.
And nobody.
And Jay Noon.
And we've got nobody remotely tonight. So if it sounds a little different, but he's still the good old nobody that we love, just like when Mark's
on. If it sounds different, it's because nobody is like the other children.
He's like the other nobodies. Yep.
Yep.
So we have a lot of stuff to get into tonight. Some things we didn't really quite get into yesterday. There was a lot of talking yesterday, which are always like the best Free Talk Lives episodes that, anyway. There's a lot going on in the world, and one of the things we have going on is actually an update. Maybe nobody doesn't know anything about this, because he wasn't on last week with, was it Colin and you and me, Jay?
Right, yeah. Also, you're going to talk about with the committee to investigate DCYF? That's what you're getting to?
Yeah.
For an update? Yeah.
So DCYF is the Department of Children and Families and Youth.
The Division of Children, Family, and Youth. So it's one of these honest governmental names for this particular municipal corporation calling itself a governmental agency. The Division of Children, Youth, and Families, because that's what they do. They specialize in dividing children from their families. So
that's a good point. So what's the difference between a department and a division in their legal land language?
But I don't even care.
Yeah,
I don't even know.
I never thought about it.
They just say it basically means department, but it is titled as a division.
Hmm.
A division of the state of New Hampshire. It's part of their corporate structure. You know, there's the state of New Hampshire Corporation, and there's the state of New Hampshire Republic. And if you really want to get an idea of what the difference is, ask a judge.
Hmm.
Do you work for the state of New Hampshire Corporation or the state of New Hampshire Republic? And it's quite likely they're going to get very upset at you. And the people in the white shirts or brown shirts, what do the sheriffs wear? Brown shirts in New Hampshire?
I think they're brown.
Yeah, I think the bailiffs are brown shirts. So they'll start surrounding you, getting closer to you, looking at you like, you know, you've been a bad dog, a bad slave, and trying to intimidate you. And they won't likely want to answer the question. You might have to ask it until they threaten to put you in contempt for asking the question. Or they just might put you in contempt if you ask a question a second time if, you know, the man wearing a black dress happens to be an extremely impatient psychopath versus a patient psychopath. I mean, they come in both ways.
Whenever I took a parking ticket to trial, I asked the man in the black dress if there was an interest that is getting in the way? Well, a conflict of interest.
Conflict.
Yes, thank you. If there was a conflict of interest, could we proceed? And he said, like, I don't know. I'd have to know what the conflict of interest was. And I was like, well, if there was one. And he was like, I would have to know what it was to answer that question, which isn't even true.
Well, yeah. So the conflict of interest is the parking ticket in your case, for example, was, you know, issued by an employee of the city of Keene.
Mm-hmm.
And now, was this judge working for the city of
Keene?
So
that's what I was getting to. I asked him, I said, who are you representing? And he said, I don't represent anyone. I don't represent the city of Keene or New Hampshire or myself or anyone.
Oh, excellent. So he's claiming to be impartial. How can you be impartial when both you and the prosecutor, I don't know who the prosecutor was in your case, probably a cop because you had a traffic ticket, but generally in like misdemeanors and stuff, it's a prosecutor who's a member of the Bar Association. The judges are members of the Bar Association. The Bar Association is like an employees union for scumbag psychopaths that are, you know, wanting to, you know, destroy culture, destroy jurisprudence, make profit off of law. You know, this is what all these, you know, corporate, you know, attorneys belong to, or attorneys at law versus an attorney in fact. An attorney in fact is like someone who can be your co-counsel and an attorney. And when you hire actual attorney at law, you're literally claiming to be indigent, and not able to represent yourself.
And that's the thing. You constantly represent something. If you're not working for a job and representing like your company, you represent yourself.
You're not constantly representing. When I'm in court, I'm defending myself because the word represent in legalese actually means to represent a fiction. So the courts are all these corporate fictions. The courts are operating under statutory law. Oh, the only court that's actually a court of record in New Hampshire, by the definition of a court of record out of Black's fourth edition. And this is the committee that I talked about last week. If you guys go to, back in the maybe the Twitter feed or whatever.
Oh, yeah. I posted it on all the Free Talk Live Mastodon Twitter feeds.
So it'd be last Thursday. I don't know what that date was off the top of my head. But the committee to investigate DCYF, the YouTube channel, the video was posted. It was like a three-hour-long committee. And it was specifically on due process of law. So one thing that is required of an element of due process of law is that the judge is to be impartial. So these judges are not impartial because they're administrative agents. They're employees of the corporation calling itself State of New Hampshire. They're not operating under common law, which would be the Republic of New Hampshire. Basically, the Republic of New Hampshire is pretty much essentially vacant, doesn't do anything. That's the actual government as defined by the Constitution for New Hampshire State, Part 1, and also Part 2. Another element of this court of record is that it operates under common law. And to operate under common law, it must be operating without statute. And in this meeting, there's two guys that get up and speak at like, I think it's about 2 hours. I got some notes on this, but there's a guy named Chris Noyes. When it first shows a video of, you know, the frame of the camera, there's a guy in a white shirt, and he comes in at about an hour and something. His name is Andrew Noyes. Actually, Chris Noyes is his father. And he talks about due process. And then there's another guy that comes in at about 2 hours and 18 minutes, I believe. He's wearing glasses. I forget his name. I got to watch the video again to get his name. He did a really good job explaining due process. But basically, you don't have due process of law unless it's in. You're not getting your due process of law, which you have a right to, unless you're getting, you are in a court of record. Now, when you ask them at circuit court or superior court, is this a court of record? They don't answer you. They say, oh, yeah, you see this thing underneath underneath me here? And he points down to a digital timestamp. That is recording the proceeding. That is not the definition of a court of record. Somebody needs to object when the judge says that, because a court of record, if you want to know the definition, look in Black's fourth edition. You can just internet search it. I don't have it right off the top of my head, but it includes the common law, and courts of record are specifically without statute. So as soon as they start bringing statutory law into the record, they are now no longer a court of record, and you are without due process of law. This is the biggest hiccup with this committee for the state of New Hampshire, because there's two things that are essentially being very much challenged by bringing in people under oath. So that was another thing, too. Leah exercised.
She's a representative in New Hampshire.
Leah Cushman.
That was on the committee.
State representative who received many, many, many affidavits from people who have been injured by New Hampshire DCYF and Family Court. I am one of the people who sent her an affidavit. And the people have an exclusive right to due process of law. And they're not being, and due process of law is not being had if the court is bringing statutory law into the case, is using statutory law as basically a charge or a basis or whatever. Because statutory law is exclusively for statutory entities. It is for the executive branch of government. That is what the statutes do. The legislature, has two jobs. So Leah just did a Twitter space last night. At Dave Cares for You, or if you just type in David Jose on Twitter or X, you'll find him. If you go to my Twitter handle, which is JNoonManCamp on Twitter, you'll find it on my page where Leah was on Dave's David Jose did a Twitter space last night, and she explained this. But the first purpose of the legislature is not to write legislation or to vote on bills. The first and primary purpose of the legislature is to take grievances from the people. That is their first and primary purpose. Leah explained this last night on a Twitter space, and she also explained this to the legislature a few months ago in one of the they have like an open thing where any legislator can get up and just kind of say whatever they want. I forget what they called that. So she got up and explained due process of law.
Oh, she got to wait. This was still on the spaces, you're saying?
No. Well, so she explained it again in the space, but also to the entire legislature about 3 months ago.
Oh, okay.
She explained what the duty of the legislature is. The primary duty of the legislature, according to the statutory construction manual for this particular legislature here in New Hampshire, and is basically all legislatures under the Constitution, is to represent the people, to be the people's representative. And the first duty of the people's representative is to correct bad in government, which is not happening until now. This particular investigation into DCYF, because multiple people wrote affidavits stating that they have been trespassed on by family court or New Hampshire DCYF.
Like over 100, right?
I'm not exactly sure. I don't know the number. Hmm. I know at one point it was, 25 or 30 people, but all it takes is one of the people.
Yeah.
And they wrote them to Leah because she was on a committee for Health and Human Services, so she has oversight in this. And then Leah started learning about due process of law. Well, what's happening is DCYF, family court, family court, for example, is not a court of law. They are not a court of record. They do not provide any due process. They have no jurisdiction over private people. They are assuming jurisdiction over people, and what they are doing is they are threatening and coercing people into jurisdiction by getting them to sign up for these services through another corporation called Waypoint. Waypoint is basically a taxpayer-funded nonprofit that, gets people on welfare rolls, gets people, these benefits and stuff and things like that. They're constantly offering you benefits. Hmm. Another thing is DCYF in their paperwork, they give you, a client number, and they refer to their victims as clients. It's kind of like a rapist referring to his victims as a client. That's essentially what DCYF does when they,
why would you even call them a clients at all? Like they're like
because that is the structure of their corporate structure. They're just a corporation. Hmm. They're like literally no different than a Walmart, except for a Walmart has to actually produce a service and a product to get revenue. DCYF has another corporation calling the state of New Hampshire that there's two ways DCYF is funded. So the state of New Hampshire points guns at people to collect taxes to fund. DCYF, and then also you have what's called the Social Security Administration Title IV program. So the Social Security Administration Title IV program, then you have United States Code Title 42 also as part of funding for DCYF. So DCYF gets massive funding from the Social Security program, and also the Judicial Pension Fund gets massive funding based on the performance of DCYF.
So you mean the pension fund for the judges when they retire?
Judges, prosecutors, lawyers, secretaries, probably the janitor at, the guy who sweeps the floor, probably those, those brown shirts that intimidate you when you say things the judge doesn't like, the bailiffs. Mm-hmm. I say probably, I'm not 100% sure, but, then again, there are a bunch of, underlings that don't get guaranteed pensions, mm-hmm. and then the manager class, the priority class, the people who, what's the district in the Hunger Games where all the wealthy psychopaths live?
I don't know. I read that in high school, but
So there's all different strategies of this financial, stuff that these guys do with the pension fund. But the bottom line is that New Hampshire DCYF is a golden goose for the state of New Hampshire. So the status bootlickers are really upset that Leah put these people bringing in their testimony. Testifying, and she had him do it under oath, because when it's done under oath, it isn't like they have to go out and get a deposition now for this to count. When it's under oath, this is being heard in a court of actual law.
So the thing is, I thought I don't know, it might not be the greatest thing for her to do when I thought it was mandatory, but if you wanted to go testify and you didn't want to take the oath, it was not mandatory and you didn't have to. So I just don't understand what the big hoopla is. Would you have something to say, nobody?
Yeah, there's another thing that relates, which is, and this is a conclusion that I came to when I was in jail. Different people play by different rules, okay? We each have whatever code we've chosen to abide with. It's always okay to play a man at his own game. Okay? He chose the game. He chose the rules. And you can engage with him using his rules if you chose to. Okay? Because he chose it. You're just agreeing to play his game with him. So if somebody is a government official, you can do anything legal to that person morally because they chose that as their game,
Yeah,
and
like
all
suing
you're
them.
doing is playing their game with them.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like suing an FBI agent for ruining your life or something like that.
Yeah.
Exactly. If you live by the law, you can die by the law, and it's okay.
But getting back to due process here, so in that hearing, two people, basically in that first hearing that was last Monday, I forget what the date was, there, as far as I'm concerned, is enough testimony under oath to shut down the entire family court system, the circuit court system, and a superior court, because they are what are called executive or legislative tribunals. They were created, Superior Court was like created by an act of legislature in like 1901 or something like that, or 1911. And so they're not part of the judiciary, even though they refer to it as a judicial branch. But the thing is that it's the judicial branch of the New Hampshire Corporation, not the New Hampshire Republic. So all these judges, all these prosecutors, all these defense attorneys are essentially on the verge of being put out of business. And the judicial pension fund totally collapsing because the judicial pension fund gets so much money from the federal government, from the Social Security Administration under Title 4D. It states that the Social Security number, the judicial pension fund gets 66% of whatever family court collects in child support payments. And in that, and what I had found, that $492 million is what it says on the Social Security Administration's website, was paid out between all 50 states for this particular judicial pension fund payment, from what I can tell under Title 4D. Now, it doesn't say judicial pension fund on there; it says some other stuff. But there are some guys who have in New Hampshire here who have gotten a hold of the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, CAFR, CAFR. There's a website called CAFR1.com that you can go on. The guy has a bunch of videos explaining this comprehensive annual financial report that all municipal corporations are required to file. And this is for balancing their books. And that's allegedly where all this is. I haven't done the forensics on this yet. In fact, there is some people behind the scenes working on the financial forensic behind this Title IV. But if you shut down DCYF, DCYF is the goose that lays golden eggs. The amount of money that that New Hampshire gets from the federal government because of the performance of DCYF is absolutely insane. And then you have the fact that the social workers have a class that they're incentivized to take. I don't know if all social workers take this class, but they are incentivized to take this class called
Maximizing profits.
Right. No, maximizing revenue for New Hampshire DCYF. And we talked about this, I don't know, a couple months ago, a little bit, you and I. And J.R. Hole did a really good presentation on that. He's another state representative that was targeted by New Hampshire DCYF. But anybody who comes against New Hampshire DCYF or Child Protective Services in general is very, very much becomes a lightning rod and targeted.
So what happened to Leah since last time we talked about
So
this?
she was removed from the committee that she started by the Speaker of the House.
It's crazy. It's really
So
crazy.
if you guys want to read an interesting affidavit by Christopher Noyes, you go to my website, jnoone.com. That's JAYNOONE.com. And on the top of the website, there's a link, and it says affidavit for maladministration. This is an affidavit that Christopher Noyes wrote. I don't know if he mailed it to Sherman Packard, but he's the Speaker of the House. And I want to make some signage, some yard signs that say something like "Send Packard Packing." He needs to be ousted because to remove someone from a committee for for not even requiring, for requesting.
Mm-hmm.
And, and Leah's very clear. She's because the Democrats objected.
Mm-hmm.
And the parasite class is very, very upset about their court system getting shut down and DCYF and family court getting shut down.
It's because, just like, when if it's so great, wouldn't you want people to go testify about it and everybody hear how great the New Hampshire Department of or Division of Family, Children, Youth Services, whatever.
Well, they have horrible reviews. There's mm-hmm. And so, parasites out there, status bootlickers that love DCYF and love that money coming from the federal government that's funding, you know, half of this, you know, a lot of the state employees' pensions are funded from things outside the state, like the federal government and these kind of incentive programs that operate based on the, you know, performance of DCYF and you know, and family court. And what's their performance? They get paid $6,000 to complete an assessment. In my case, I wouldn't allow DCYF to complete the assessment, and the assessment order from family court said a police officer could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I asked a police officer to do it, the local police are like, oh, that's great. Yeah, we'll do that. That'll you know, put all this to sleep. Because, you know, the cops had already been to my property, you know, a dozen times.
So they filled it out saying you weren't a threat to your kids.
Well, DCYF wouldn't even let them do the assessment. Mm-hmm. Said that they were incompetent.
Oh, yeah.
So they weren't able to do it. And the order says, yes, that police can do it. And then I got a whole argument from the DCYF lawyer, this guy, Ross McLeod, another scumbag. You guys ought to look into him.
Hmm.
I mean, he's into this vote stacking thing and all kinds of nonsense. And I think it's not Milford. I forget the name of the town. But if he's a selectman in
Milton.
I can't remember the name of the town, but it's one of those towns down by the Massachusetts border. There was a whole bunch of hoopla about a year ago about the, you know, counting the votes. And then like the one good board of selectmen, they released some like bogus statement on the selectman letterhead to get rid of this guy. Or I don't even know if they got rid of this guy, but there's been a lot of talk about this. But anyways, Ross McLeod submits these motions for contempt. Now, these guys submitted a motion for contempt after the chief of police in Henniker said, yeah, there's no neglect or abuse going on here. You guys are barking up the wrong trees. Meanwhile, I got people down at the gas station saying, why is DCYF going after you when there's a crackhead family in town that's got kids that are clearly being abused and neglect?
Hmm.
And one guy told me that he personally called DCYF himself because he's like a neighbor and they never did anything. That guy's going to come testify too. His story is going to be interesting.
Interesting. It doesn't seem like DCYF or these CPS services, Child Protective Services, ever are really going after people with the intent to make people's lives better. They're just going after political targets. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up. Don't go anywhere.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. In addition to being one of the world's first cryptocurrencies, Dash was the first crypto project to have a decentralized autonomous organization that to this day continues to improve and promote Dash. Every month, 10% of the mining rewards go into a treasury. Anyone with one Dash to spend can put forward a proposal to the Dash Masternodes. The Masternodes vet the proposals and decide which ones move forward and are funded by that treasury. Nowadays, DAOs are plentiful, but Dash paved the way by doing it first, nearly a decade ago. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
That you control, and 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That's 603-283-6160. And Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. In addition to being one of the world's first cryptocurrencies, Dash was the first crypto project with a decentralized autonomous organization that to this day continues to improve and promote Dash. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and use Dash. You can learn more at dash.org. That's dash.org. And with you on the show tonight, you've got me, Bonnie.
Jay Noon.
And nobody
there? And nobody.
And we have nobody on the show with us tonight. I'm going to go right back in, or right into the phones because it is a call and talk radio show. And 603-283-6160 is the number you can call to get in with your thoughts. But Rob from Vermont, you're on Free Talk Live. Rob, what's on your mind? Rob from Vermont. Oh, maybe I pressed the wrong button here. Wait, no, I didn't. Maybe I'll come back to you, Rob. Couldn't hear you there. Looks like we have, I think, Skeeter in California. Skeeter, are you there? Or is this not Skeeter?
What are you doing, Jay? You should be endorsing programs like DCYF, and that includes, but not limited to, CPS. You want to make the federal government stronger, Jay?
No.
Is that what you want to do?
No, absolutely not.
Then why are you trying to get rid of these programs? These programs are what hurts the federal government.
No, it doesn't.
You said so yourself.
No,
it does.
How does it hurt the federal government? Because it gives them funding. The government just steals the money for people and or collects it creates it out of thin air.
No, that's a fallacy. The taxpayer isn't necessarily on the hook for federal government spending. With debt instruments, we can shield ourselves and place all that.
He didn't say it was just taxes. He said that they created out of thin air.
Say that again?
He didn't say that it was just taxes that fund it. He said they created out of thin air.
I mean, it's just...
That's good.
It's really clear that Skeeter suffers from mental illness. I mean, you're a totally deranged dude. Like, this whole, idea of let's, make the government so big and fat that it just implodes on itself, kind of like fallacy that you have.
How do you think the government will fail? How do you think the government will fail? Is it because of libertarian movements like you that you'll secede New Hampshire and it'll all collapse?
No one is ever saying that New Hampshire should secede so that the federal government collapses. It's so that people in New Hampshire aren't under its rule anymore.
Guess what, Bonnie? If you allow the system to financially collapse, you can secede much easier than trying to face the greatest military force in the history of the world.
Nobody's trying to do that.
Power.
Yeah, nobody's trying to face the greatest military force in the world. We're trying
to divorce
ourselves from
that. I'd rather they just left me alone.
Yeah.
You don't have that right. This is ultimately their land. They fought the revolution. That system fought the revolution.
Everybody who fought in the revolution is dead.
New Hampshire. That's not your land to secede.
Everybody who fought in the Revolutionary War is dead.
Libertarian principles.
So you're saying that nobody says he wants to be left alone, and you're saying he doesn't have a right to be left alone? I mean, that's actually right in the New Hampshire Constitution.
You were born on the democratic collective property. You are a shareholder, and you have a right to vote to change the system through bilateral secession. Unilateral secession...
Yeah, except the entire system is rigged. We're completely excommunicated. We're disenfranchised. We aren't even allowed to participate in the system. We're not in the debates. We're not in anything. We are tax cattle, nothing else.
So you are pretty much correct there, nobody, except for in New Hampshire, because New Hampshire, we have something really special. We have this 400 body, 400 people make up the New Hampshire House of Representatives. Actually, 435 is 35 senators, but 400 state representatives. It is quite literally a volunteer position to be an elected member of the House of Representatives in New Hampshire. Unlike Massachusetts and New York and California, for example, they have a legislative where the legislators are paid. Actually, so there's more state legislatures in New Hampshire than there are the other 49 states combined. And New Hampshire has a population of 1.3 million. So you are getting your most representative value out of the New Hampshire legislature than anywhere else. Also, it's just common people in the legislature, like Leah Cushman, who's a mom and a wife, that cares about her community, that cares about what her community is going to look like in 10 years, 5 years, 20 years, and 50 years, because she has kids just like me. I am very concerned about what you know, my community is going to look like 30 years from now, 40 years from now, 100 years from now. And what we have, I have observed from the past is that since people have been pretty much, you know, doing, you know, just getting high, drinking, drugging, being distracted by other, you know, implements of bread and circus, like, you know, the really inexpensive government subsidized food, the government subsidized entertainment, you know, all of your NFL, all your pro sports ball stuff is all government subsidized one way or another for the purpose of this bread and circus. So you have a whole bunch of people for like generations, they haven't been paying attention. Well, here in New Hampshire, we have the Free State Project, so we're paying attention. Also, we have this legislative body that does not have a pension fund. There is no legislative pension fund in New Hampshire for actual legislators. There might be a state pension fund for some people that work full-time within the legislature. There's all kinds of people that work there. But because the legislators are paid a stipend of $100 a year, it's not even considered a paycheck. It's just a stipend. There is no pension fund. In Massachusetts and New York, for example, there is federal incentives for these guys to keep on pushing the federal narrative, whatever it is. And their pension fund gets some boost from some kind of federal incentives. And the whole legislative pension fund thing is not something I've looked into yet, but definitely the judicial pension fund gets a lot of money. So every single so here in New Hampshire, because we have a citizen legislature, because you can quite likely heckle your state representatives in the local grocery store, if you know what they look like, because there are so many of them. I think it's one state representative for every, you know, 3,700 people. And so for the first time in history, this thing that we did, that Leah has done, calling this committee to investigate DCYF and putting the people under oath, offering them that. When I go, I'm going to testify Monday. So Monday, the 25th, I got to look through my notes here to get when that what room it's in. But we'll have that for the next segment at 9 a.m.
You're going to ask to be put under oath?
Yep. Oh, I'm definitely going to request to be put under oath. Hmm. Then I'm going to demand to be put under oath. I will probably have someone there to put me under oath because I want my testimony to count. Your testimony does not count unless it's under oath. Hmm. And the parasite is so scared. Like literally what this committee is doing quite possibly is putting enough evidence out there that could literally, and the legislature has the ability to shut DCYF down. They have the ability to, it's written right in the Constitution, they have the ability to fire all these people that are being complained about, to get rid of them, whether they believe it or not. Now, you guys got guys like Sherman Packard, the Speaker of the House, who he is just a...
Is
established,
he a Democrat or a Republican?
He's a Republican-Democrat shill. Hmm. I'm sorry, he's both. He's pro-parasite. He's an establishment guy. He's registered as a Democrat, but even his father was like a political crony also. I forget. If you just Wikipedia Sherman Packard, it talks about how his father was, I believe, president of the Senate maybe, or Speaker of the Senate or something. But he's from a political family, you know, and that's another thing, too, is like, you know, the framers were of the Constitution were, you know, cautioned about, you know, allowing these dynasties to be in control of politics. So in New Hampshire, we are exercising our rights to be heard. And it's actually pretty simple. It's very much in black and white.
What about the people who literally do just want to opt out, though? Like, I didn't sign any of the affidavits because I honestly don't want Leah Cushman to represent me. She doesn't represent me. No, none of them do. She could be the best one, and it wouldn't make me want her to represent me.
So the reason that I sent her an affidavit is because I was damaged, and the only way, the common law way to get remedy is to notice your representative. So I did. I filled out, I wrote a notice to Leah Cushman. Many other people wrote notices.
But I'm just saying, in context of what Skeeter was saying, oh, you can't opt out of it. You don't have the right to. I do believe I have the right to opt out.
So,
maybe I don't want to be represented by any of these people. I don't want them to hear my grievances.
I would throw it on they, them, and those who won't leave you alone. Where is your evidence that I can't opt out of your system? Where is your evidence I'm subject to your jurisdiction?
Yeah.
Where is the instrument, produce the instrument that bears my signature where I willingly and knowingly agree to be subject to your jurisdiction. Hmm. Now, if you have a driver's license and you sign that driver's license with and you didn't sign it all rights reserved, or you didn't attach a statement saying that I'm doing this under threat, duress, and coercion, I'm not, you know, agreeing or consenting to waive any of my rights, you know, or if you fill out tax returns where you check off you're a United States citizen, you're like, when you get a driver's license, the Massachusetts driver's license exam application says that this driver, that you are signing this driver's license under, you know, like the penalties of pains of perjury, all things are true, and accordance with MGL chapter 89, comma, semicolon, blah, blah, whatever, chapter 90, all these chapters. You start looking up these chapters and how many pages of text it is. Is, you know, it's more than enough text to fill this entire studio that we're in if you had double-sided paperwork. Hmm. And nobody's going to read that. It's just like everybody is, you know, basically accepting these terms of service when they, you know, get these government permission slips, for example. And everybody gets a driver's license, for example, under threat, duress, and coercion. Everybody signs a tax return under threat, duress, and coercion. Nobody willingly and knowingly accepts to be essentially cattle, like nobody is saying. They're just told by their parents to do this at 16 years old or at 14 years old when they get a, you know, their job at Kmart, for example, and their mom ships them off to work when they're old enough to get a work permit, like a proper young slave. So, like, we got to get out of that whole mindset, you know, that you know, of asking government for permission.
It just sounds like jurisdictional traps.
It's all jurisdictional traps. So, anyways, getting right back into
back into it, we do. I'm going to see if Rob is there. Rob from Vermont, are you there? Going once.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hey, Rob.
All right.
What's on your mind?
Hey. So, I was watching a video this morning about 4:30. And you guys are familiar with Harry Connick Jr.?
I'm not.
Very famous actor. Well, his father was a district attorney or a county attorney in, I think, either Louisiana or Tennessee back in the 70s.
Okay.
And this guy... he put innocent people in jail. He never turned over exculpatory evidence in any of his cases, and nobody suspected a thing. And he put hundreds and hundreds of men on death row, and it's incredible. And this kind of behavior, it's not only just in New Hampshire, but it's throughout the United States. You know, and there's no checks and balances for county attorneys or judges.
There is in New Hampshire.
It's about time we need to have some new laws coming, so at least the judicial system can start questioning.
They're probably not going to allow new laws.
So hold on, the laws already exist. Just read the New Hampshire Constitution. Read Article 32 of the New Hampshire Constitution, and just listen to the Twitter space that last night with Leah. And Leah talks about how she ordered a 1928 edition Webster's Dictionary because she wanted her kids to know the definitions of the words, you know, basically 200 and some odd years ago that were, and how they were being used. And a Webster's 1828 dictionary. So you take every single word from every... like the word venue, for example, does not mean what you think it means. Look it up in either Black's Fourth or Webster's 1828. The word court of record, look it up in Black's Law Dictionary, fourth edition, and understand what these words actually mean. Because the problem is we've had this, our culture has been degenerated, you know, via public schools, via, you know, you know, the welfare program, because now we have, you know, welfare is just, we have 10th generation families that have been living on 10th generations of people living on welfare, and they have been tremendously degenerated over generation to generation. It's generational warfare is what's going on, especially with the welfare system. I believe that people's IQs are being reduced tremendously that are living in this welfare paradigm.
Oh, that's coming out in the news that Americans' IQs are dropping.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially inner city welfare recipients. Absolutely. You know, when you're feeding your, you know, for children, for example, have the greatest IQ they're ever going to have the day they're born. And you're not going to be able to, obviously you can't test the IQ that day, but their intelligence is all there. Everything's there. It's very, very difficult to increase the intelligence. It is really, really easy to reduce it. And the way you reduce it is you feed them fake fat. You feed them the seed oils. You feed them the breast milk flavored Coca-Cola that they call Enfamil or Similac. This is what a lot of the welfare families are doing. I have a friend that works for a large supermarket chain in the Northeast, and she was telling me that the data they collect from all of the cards, I don't want to say the name of this outfit, but it's a big super. They have over 100 supermarkets in New England, New York, and New Jersey. Anyways, this chain. So they have let's call it Walmart. They have like a Walmart card, which Walmart doesn't have like a card, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, a lot of these like Hannaford's, for example, they got a Hannaford's card, and they can tell. And it's not Hannaford I'm talking about. And she was telling me that based on the cards and versus the people and you the people using like EBT is that they're basically buying like the absolute least expensive calories they can buy for their children. And based on the data, so there's like an app that you can get with this grocery store chain, and you can have like a cart for like each one of your kids, and like, you know, or family members can put in a cart what they want for like, just so all you gotta do is look at the app. I've never like looked, I just heard about this. And, you know, it's a good idea for organizing your shopping, especially if you have a big family and, you know, whatever. And, you know, you get it, and then it tells you how much it costs. It tells you what aisle it's in. It tells you what shelf it's on, you know, Lowe's and, you know, Home Depot do the same thing when you're looking for stuff. I do use their
Walmart
website for
that. Actually, yeah, for like finding things on the shelf.
And so anyways, and also it's set up for the pickers that go pick all the same thing. Like you can even just use the app to do that. And you can just, you know, but the people using the EBT cards with kids is pretty clear to the data mining that, you know, this grocery store chain has done. And I would love to get a hold of this data. She won't give it to me because she knows I'll talk about it. But she's told me about it to my friend. And so basically what's happening is, you know, you have the welfare recipient mom that has a couple hundred dollar hairdo, a couple hundred dollars worth of nails, $1,000 iPhone, and they're buying ho-hos and, you know, and I actually looked at the grocery store. It was like, I was at Walmart a few days ago with the family, and I picked up a thing of zebra cakes. You know what zebra cakes are?
Little Debbie's, I think.
Whatever, yep, something like that. So basically for like $2, like $3, you can get something like 7,500 calories out of those zebra cakes. And those are like harmful calories.
Yeah,
if we're going to, you know, if we're going to, yeah, it's all seed oil. It was the first ingredient. It's like hydrogenated, whatever, high fructose corn syrup, fractionate, you know, this, that, the other thing. So it's really bad stuff. And so then you, like, if you look at all your cereals, like you should not be feeding your kids cereals.
It's just a bunch of corn for one thing and for another thing.
It's either corn, it's wheat, it's
seed
wheat
oils, you wouldn't really think there'd be oils in it, but it's like fried sometimes.
Well, there's a lot of seed oils in the cereals, certain cereals. There's a lot of, genetically modified, you know, sugar based ingredients, whether it's beet sugar, high fructose corn syrup. The corn is all, you know, got a lot of glyphosate Roundup in it. Yeah. The wheat that they're using those cereals for, the wheat-based cereals and even the oat, that crop is, you know, all commercial, big corporate ag. They're, you know, got crop dust and Roundup on it, you know, a couple weeks before they harvest it. So the gluten's all full of Roundup, got glyphosate in it, which is a mineral inhibitor, which means that you're going to be fat. This is why in America, it's like the fattest country in the world, and the poor people are the fattest.
Yeah.
And in inner cities, there's a major, major problem, too, with, and soda that these people with EBT cards and children, the soda and the juices, like kids should not be drinking any juices at all. Hmm. They should not be eating cereal. You know, they should be eating good, wholesome fats like butter from grass-fed cows, you know, pork, you know, bacon, you know, and meat and fruits and vegetables and maybe some whole grains. Like, you know, get organic oats, rolled oats, and make your own oatmeal. You know, you don't buy the oatmeal like the Quaker Oats garbage that's got a whole bunch of, if you look at Quaker Oats, for example, you have Quaker Oats that are like from Europe and Quaker Oats from the United States, and look at the labeling on them. It says oats, non-GMO, or some of it says GMO oats, genetically modified organism, this, genetically, you know. And so, and I believe they do have an organic brand now, which shouldn't have any glyphosate in it, but I still don't trust these big corporate stores. They'll just put an organic label on
anything.
I know,
I see the word organic on stuff, and I'm like, does that actually mean anything? Is there really
it really doesn't.
Poison on this?
What means something if you know the actual guy who produces it?
Mm-hmm.
So your commercial grains, your commercial cereals are for livestock and cattle, and they're government subsidized, and they're really cheap, and people are feeding their kids cereal all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had a box of cereal since I've really wrapped my head around this nutrition thing with humans. We haven't had a box of cereal in the house for over a year.
I really like having cereal because it's just like something quick. I like it, and I can drink my raw milk with it. So I have found one cereal that I can eat that's just rice puffs. And it's just rice. There's no corn and there's no seed oils on it.
Yep.
And it's sweetened with molasses.
Yep, there you go. And you can sweeten yourself with like maple, and maple's like sweeteners we use are maple and honey.
Mm-hmm.
But like I let my kids basically eat all the butter from grass-fed cows that they want.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good brain building material, and we don't do any seed oils. We don't do any cereals. We do like lots of leafy greens, lots of vegetables, and a lot of your welfare single moms are not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's an expensive way to eat. And especially when you're buying like food that's like, you know, I think it's pretty important to buy like organic greens. So there is a couple of places here in the Northeast that have greenhouses that grow organic greens, and they do like tours and stuff. And you can go check them out. There's one place in Western Mass that's really good. I forget what these two places are called. There's one place a little north of here too. It's right off of Route 10.
One thing that sucks that just makes me not really trust even that, it's really terrible, is this guy I met during 2020, or it was actually 2021, Ian and I were going around interviewing people, asking them if they support secession. He did. He had just moved here from Massachusetts because he was an organic farmer in Massachusetts his like whole life. And during 2020, they went over everyone's fields, including his own fields, spraying chemicals. I don't know if they told him what the chemicals were, but they were spraying chemicals saying it was for COVID, like quote unquote due to COVID, we have to spray your fields and everyone's fields,
yeah,
whether you want to or not.
That's really horrible. But the thing is, even if you're not getting organic food and you're just going and just buying whatever at Walmart, still eating like the lettuce, the strawberries, the blueberries, the apples that are just actual whole fruits, whole foods, and like, you know, steak and like hamburger and, you know, the pork and the chicken that is actual real meat, even if it is from like the corporate, you know, tortured animal, you know, factory farming, it's still better than this ultra processed food, which is what has become a majority of the diet of a lot of Americans. And it is causing decay in our culture, quite literally.
603-283-6160. Don't go anywhere. More Free Talk Live is coming up. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live.
The Shire Free Church offers a sanctuary to those seeking an escape from state churches.
The Shire Free Church is an interfaith, diverse group of people that may not share identical theological beliefs.
As a member in or minister of the Shire Free Church, you are a sovereign individual and may be the faith of your choice.
We don't claim to have all of the answers.
We are open to all peaceful people.
We want to learn from each other.
What unifies the Shire Free Church and its diverse members is peace,
love,
and liberty. There are many paths to God, one for every individual.
The Shire Free Church does not define a specific path beyond these parameters that must be your foundation.
Peace as your way.
Love as your guide.
And liberty as your light.
Learn more at church.shiresociety.com.
That's church.shiresociety.com.
Free Talk Live.
radio that you control, and 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That's 603-283-6160. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie.
Jay Noon.
And Free Talk Live is brought to you by LibertyMinded.com. Official Free Talk Live gear like t-shirts and hoodies are available at LibertyMinded.com. Plus, you'll find a unique collection of cool and funny Liberty-oriented clothing at LibertyMinded.com. And so, and we're just going to go right back to your phone calls and thoughts. Dave Ridley, Dave from New Hampshire, you're on Free Talk Live. Dave is of, RidleyReport.com. I almost said LibertyReport.com. What's on your mind, Dave?
How much do you guys know about Lori Ortolano of Nashua?
I have no idea who that is. Also, we have nobody back with us. Sorry for a second there. I don't know what happened. Our Jitsi room had turned off, so welcome back, nobody. Sorry about that.
So Lori is a middle-aged, middle-class, or maybe well-to-do Nashua resident who's been in conflict with the city of Nashua for a while. I think a few years ago they arrested her for being in a Nashua government office and allegedly refusing to leave because she wanted to get some paper, you know, so she was doing a right to know request and trying to get her right to know request filled.
Okay.
And since then, some things have happened with her case that have got her back in the spotlight. So I guess her case went all the way to the Supreme Court, and it ordered the city of Nashua to hand over some assessment records that she was trying to get and was having trouble getting from Nashua.
Oh, this is interesting. This is a road I'm going to go down here pretty soon with actually, we're going to do this with a few towns simultaneously with some people to where we do right to know requests to the assessor's office for, first off, their process and procedure to put a tax levy on property, attractive land that is private property with a home that is not commercial, manufacturing, or anything like that. And from what I understand, there is no procedure to put a tax levy on private property. All the tax levy statutes and procedures are exclusively for commercial and industrial properties. And then also the other thing is, you know, where is the instrument, a public record request for the instrument that bears my signature where I knowingly and willingly agree to fund the teachers, pay for these public employee pension funds, you know, all the things that your property tax goes for that you're essentially forced to do. I don't believe these towns have an authority to collect a tax, but I don't think anything happens until you really challenge them with the public records request. But go on, Dave.
Yeah, you know, New Hampshire has a right to know law, and you're supposed to be able to get papers from the government that you request. But she's claiming that they've been redacting stuff that they give her. She's claiming they will sometimes just flood her with, here, you wanted that email? Well, here's that email plus the 1,000 pages of attachments that came with it. Or you know, maybe not necessarily quite that much, but she's just claiming there's this volume issue.
So it's like hidden in there?
And, well, she... Yeah, I'm not sure, but she has since she won at the Supreme Court, things have not necessarily been going her way, despite the win. So she is suing the city of. She's reopening lawsuits against the city of Nashua now. So there's, I think, at least three issues. It's a right to know lawsuit, a contempt of court lawsuit, and she's trying to file a protective order against the city of Nashua.
So to protect herself from them? Yeah, and there's also
something like
a noise. I don't know if you're like rubbing up against the microphone or something like that.
What's this woman's name again, Dave?
Lori Ortolano.
And how does someone find out about this?
I just Google her name and read the media articles about her.
Do you know if she has like any kind of social media presence or a website? Because I'm very interested in like what exactly she is asking the assessor that they don't want to tell her.
I feel like she has a website, but I haven't seen it in a while.
Okay.
All right. We could probably maybe find it after the show, after the break or something like that. But that's really interesting. Yeah, a very open and transparent government we have. What is that supposed to be, Article 8 or something?
Yeah, and well, we don't have government. We have a municipal corporation acting as government. Dave, you might have heard me talk about this before, but real quick, if someone wants to internet search, Washington Post, Massachusetts State Police are not governments. You'll find an article where the Massachusetts ACLU did a right to know request, public records request, Freedom of Information Act request style document to the Massachusetts State Police. Massachusetts State Police refused to answer it, said they didn't have to. He took it all the way, the ACLU took it all the way up the chain to the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts. The attorney for the Massachusetts State Police, named guy named Jack Collins, who I actually used to know, he represented the state police and said that Massachusetts State Police are made up of 52 law enforcement councils. They are not part of the government. They are not subject to anything the government is subject to. They're not subject to the Constitution. They're not subject to the Freedom of Information Act laws or statutes because they are no different than the American Heart and Lung and the American Cancer Society. They are law enforcement councils. And because they have a tax identification number that begins with, I think it's 098, don't quote me on that part, the IRS has said that they are just merely charities. And the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts agreed with them. And they're exactly right. We are not operating under governments. If it was a government as described by the constitutions, you wouldn't have these courts that are not courts of record, like circuit court, district court, family court, and superior court. You would have actual, you know, supreme judicial courts, and they would maybe have sub-franchise of the supreme judicial courts where you have actual due process, which is not happening. And it's because everybody is being assumed to be municipal corporations. It even says right in the, if you read the city charter for the city of Keene, New Hampshire, part one basically says that all inhabitants shall and remain as municipal corporations under this charter. So, like, the, and people got to understand that they are not inhabitants, and, you know, unless they are a municipal corporation under the city. The inhabitant might be the name in all capital letters or something, you know, the legal fiction, the you know, that deal. But
straw man,
whatever. But you know, the bottom line is we're not dealing with governments; we're dealing with municipal corporations. DCYF is not a municipal, is not a government. Circuit court is not a judicial part of the Republican state of New Hampshire government. It is a, they are legal fictions. They are the part of the corporate franchise, and they're all bankrupt. This was all set up, they're all set up to collect bankruptcy debt. So we have a massive system of misunderstanding going on and mistakes being made constantly, and they're not respecting the rights of the people. And this is where Leah Cushman is being very, very proactive in you know, the taking these redress of grievance from the people. And and this is why she was kicked off her committee by, you know, Sherman Packard. But go on, Dave. Do you know have any of the details on what she is asking for in her public records requests?
Well, I'm not very familiar with what she was doing, but by coincidence, I was looking up what she was doing today. I mean, I learned a little bit about it today or yesterday, and I was thinking about calling in about it, but I figured, you know, Jay's going to be able to call in about this. He's going to know all about that, because I think you were the one that posted the information. So I decided not to call about that because I knew you to handle it.
So I posted the information about Lori Ordinata, you thought?
No, you posted information about Leah Cushman.
Oh, Leah, yes, yep. No, I was asking that Lori Ordinata and Nashua, if you knew what specific questions she had or what specifically she was looking for in her right to know request from the city of Nashua's assessor's office.
Yeah, if you'd asked me 2 years ago, I would have known, because that was in the news back then, but I don't remember what she was asking for. It was just assessment records. That's the only part I remember.
What exactly is an assessment record?
That would be like when the town decides how much, or the city decides how much your property is worth. I think that's what they're talking about.
Okay, well, interesting. It's really weird when the government wants to keep information away from people.
So what happens is, according to their own statutory construction manual, this is for Florida anyways, there's a guy who's really into this. His name is Steve Emerson. If you internet search Steve Emerson, he's got a whole bunch of really bad audio talk shows that he does. If you can tolerate the bad audio, you'll see he talks about how the statutory construction is that these assessments are supposed to be have a signature from the assessor, and none of the assessment cards have this signature because not, the assessors won't sign them. So one of the things that you do a right-to-know request for is a certified copy of a signed assessment card, which they just won't give you an assessment card with a signature on it. Because and also the other right-to-know request that we're going to be doing for these towns is they charge you a real estate tax, but nowhere on your property deed does it say the word real estate. Mm-hmm. It says a tract of land or a parcel of land. Mm-hmm. It does not say you bought real estate. So a simple public records request for the process and procedure that they rely on to convert your tract of land into real estate, because you didn't buy real estate, you bought a tract of land, but they charge you real estate tax, and real estate is different than land. Basically, real estate is the land of a corporation.
What if had a real estate agent? Does that matter?
It doesn't matter. Real estate agent, they don't even know what's going on. Most of these real estate agents are totally ignorant to any of this stuff, and they really don't even care. They're just like these CPAs and accountants don't understand how to. You ask them, ask any CPA if they've ever read a 1040 form, and they'll say, yes, I have, and say, okay, can you please tell me what 1040 part, United States Code Title 26, subsection 1040 part A is. And they can't tell you what part A is. Then they'll look up on the 1040 form, and it starts a part B. Part A is who is subject to pay income tax liability. So it's people living within the United States, United States citizens, and some kind of resident, whatever, alien status. I forget what it is. Mm-hmm. So, most people don't live in the United States because the United States is clearly defined as District of Columbia, territories and possessions. And most people are not United States citizens.
I can't imagine wanting to live there either. Just right. Side note, like, oh, I want to live next to these tyrants.
Yeah, the number one place in the world that's going to be targeted by all countries that hate us.
Yeah. Also, for some it's kind just of disaster. Like so much crime there.
And it's just so much evil is there, and there's so many bad people you're surrounded.
Yeah.
That's why I call
my
it
friend
District of Criminals.
Lives in West Virginia, technically, but so close to the border that he goes to Virginia all the time, and he lives near, dang it, I forgot all of a sudden what it's called, but there's a county where all of the government people that live in D.C. mostly live in this county. It starts with an L. And he said that you just get like a bad vibe around there because of just how bad all the people are. There's just a bunch of lawyers and politicians.
Yeah, it's kind of like getting in the elevator at the state house with all of the with a couple of lobbyists.
Oh, yeah.
I walk off the elevator and I say something like, you're definitely going to hell. I'll point, look right at one of these lobbyist guys. So I'm not riding an elevator with you. I don't want to be, on a train
in your
ride.
Karma.
I don't want to receive any part of your karma.
Funny. Anything else for us today, Dave Ridley?
Once there was a lobbyist that tried to stop me from testifying in front of a committee.
I was thinking about this today. So I think that all testimony needs to be under oath. That's another thing Leah talked about in her Twitter space last night. And I'll make sure that before we're done here, we get this Twitter space posted to the FTL
stuff. You can
stuff.
Listen after the fact?
Yep. Okay. You got to be on Twitter to listen to it. In fact, I think that they're going to rip it and put it on Rumble also. Because actually, this Twitter space was scheduled to happen a couple times, and it just wouldn't work on Leah's end. Hmm. Like as soon as Leah started talking, it wouldn't work. It was really a pain in the butt. But she talked about how there is people that lie constantly in front of these committees. So when they have a committee hearing to hear a bill, people come up there and constantly lie. Lawyers constantly lie. I heard for House Bill 1012, which is the bill to basically make it so you can't charge a parent with child endangerment unless there was like an injury or harm happens to the child. This lawyer is named Brown. He works, Andrew Brown, I think is his name. I'm not sure if I got that right, but he works for Merrimack County Prosecutor's Office. Hmm. So he's someone that's there testifying in favor of the state, in favor of more power for the state, more money for the state, more authority for the state, and as a taxpayer, you're paying for this. He's testifying just like a lobbyist. Hmm. And the way he testified was Definitely most of it, if he was sworn under oath, he knew he couldn't say. So those guys should have to be held under oath. In fact, that's something that needs to be made a big stink about going forward, is these lobbyists can only testify under oath. And I think only and government agents and those representing, somebody is in the business of representing or lobbying. So the lawyer is there for the Merrimack County Prosecutor's Office. Anybody who holds a title of nobility or some government thing should have to be under oath every single time they are speaking in any testimony. And I think the only people that could that should have the ability to not be under oath are common people. That's it. Because that's where they're saying the oath is going to be, you know, something that is going to be intimidating for common people. And that's when Leo was like at the thing there, says, well, then if you don't want to be under oath, I will still let you testify. You can still testify. Because
honestly, like, I probably wouldn't want to be under oath. I don't want any. I just like want the least amount. I would want to not have something that they would use against me.
But yeah, I agree.
I totally understand her point of view of why people,
right. So,
especially the government employees.
Right, because this is an investigation. And even I think her name's Baker, was the one in that video who's objected to
the oath. Oh, yeah, the Democrat.
She's like, oh, well, it's not like we're going to be prosecuting anybody. Yes, we are.
Hmm.
That is the only point of this. Somebody must stay after school for detention.
Mm-hmm.
There are social workers. There are administrators. There are attorneys in DCYF that need to lose their job,
mm-hmm.
that need to be stripped of their pensions, that need to be sued into oblivion.
Aren't Democrats supposed to be the ones against monopoly? Go ahead, nobody.
What they need is to water the damn tree.
Well, the tree of liberty.
Well, I'm going to pretend to not know what that means.
It must be watered from time to time.
Well, the thing about it is, I just think that Democrats claim to not like monopolies. And what we have is there should be businesses competing for this either. But we have a monopoly on the force to take children away from their parents, and it is unresponsive to the people in any way. And these Democrats are the ones protecting that, and it's really hilarious to me.
Yeah, and the Democrats love public power monopolies. They love unions. They love the teachers union, which is a massive monopoly. Actually, the headlines on a newspaper I saw this morning at the local gas station said, town refuses to give budgets to school. Hell yeah, that's awesome. I don't know what town it was, but basically a lot of these increased budgets got voted down at the town elections that was, I guess, past Tuesday.
Nice.
And
it's like they always increase because the Democrats always give a sob story about how they don't have enough money to educate the kids, but their test scores always continue to go down and down and down.
Right.
We talked about this yesterday.
Yep, they keep on lowering the bar. And something like 80% of the money that is being going to service, like the school district, for example, is going towards pension funds. And the pension funds are unrealistic. The way they're structured, they're unrealistic. And because they're government pension funds, they're run by a bunch of thieves and criminals, because the pension funds don't need to make money on paper. They can siphon off them because the taxpayers have to keep these pension funds at a certain level. Like I said, the state of New Hampshire, the state of whatever, is going to point guns at the people that pay the taxes to make sure these pension funds stay afloat. And it's going to be interesting when it all falls apart. And I really hope it does fall apart financially, because this financial beast system is the only thing that's keeping the parasite in power.
Yep.
It really is. And so I do support all the people who want to that don't deserve welfare, get on welfare, milk that entire system. But I don't support it if you're going to, you know, let it, you know, degenerate you. And a lot of people who get on SSI, for example, that I've met, they just turn into piles of S almost instantly that I've known over the years. And
so, David, the person the lobbyist that tried to keep you from testifying, was that in front of people? Or were they trying to do that in secret? I don't know that story.
So this would have been about 15 years ago. He just told me I wasn't allowed to testify unless I registered.
Huh.
Like,
well, that's not the case.
I was supposed to register as a lobbyist to testify.
Whoa. It seems like they've definitely been trained a lot since then. Like, they don't try to pull stupid stuff like that as much anymore.
Now, is that because, like, 15 years ago, common people weren't actively testifying at these committees, and then guys like you started doing it a lot, and these lobbyists just didn't know any better?
I think the lobbyists just didn't know any better. Mm. But with regard to what Rich was saying a minute ago, this business about tree watering, the tree gets stronger when you water it. And if you want this tree to get weaker, Google Erica Chenoweth.
Erica Chenoweth.
Well, the tree is liberty in the metaphor. And the quote is, "The tree of liberty must be watered from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. It is its natural manure."
Yeah, Rich, you're a chihuahua. You're just yip-yipping about how important it is to use violence against the government when that doesn't even work.
Violence against you, and I believe in self-defense.
So
yeah, it doesn't work like that, Rich. You want to downsize the government, you get three times the results by doing it peaceably.
So I believe that we are in a sort of a world of abundance. And at least my entire life, it's been abundance. I don't know anybody who starved to death. I don't think anybody here knows anyone that starved to death. We've been living in a world of abundance. And we're also in this information and this technology that we have all the tools that we don't need to use violence whatsoever. Violence begets violence. So if these guys come against you with violence, and you respond with violence, they're just gonna literally napalm you.
Even if they don't just overcome you with power, one thing I think that would happen is, oh, well, you just lost the public relations because they have all the power to make themselves look like the good guys every time. That's what they do to Ian in the news. And if Ian was blasted, like, so I came out of the house blasting, they'd have even more ammo. Ironically, ammo to use against him and make him look like a bad guy. Thank you for the call, Dave Ridley. And 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. You can bring up whatever's on your mind. More Free Talk Live coming up. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live.
Hey. You are going to love the movie Victimless Crime Spree. It's hilarious, heartwarming, and carries a ton of inspiring freedom messages. Feeling down about the lack of liberty in your life? You need to put on this film with some friends and have a good laugh. It's a true story about me and my friends in New Hampshire living free, singing, dancing, and getting arrested. Of course, it's all on video, and the bad guys, the cops, judges, bailiffs, and sheriffs, they all play their part like it's out of a movie or something. You would think we scripted the whole thing, but it's real life. Go ahead and have a watch, and if it's been a while, have another look. I guarantee you'll notice things now that you didn't notice before. And the best part is that you're going to walk away feeling a renewed sense of your own power. You are the master of your destiny, and you will be free in your lifetime. Victimless Crime Spree.
You control. You can call in with whatever is on your mind, and that number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. And I'd like to thank Stephen Cryer, who is a silver level amplifier with us here at Free Talk Live. Being an amplifier means that he helps to advertise, market, promote, and support Free Talk Live. So thank you so much to Stephen. And if you would like to learn more about that, you can go to amps.freetalklive.com. That's amps.freetalklive.com. And with you on the show tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Jay Noon,
and Nobody.
And Jay, you wanted to give the people your website so they can find some of the stuff we've been covering tonight.
So yes, on my website, jaynoone.com. That's jaynoone.com. And at the top of my website, so if you guys want to check out these affidavits, we have the first one is New Hampshire DCYF Affidavit for Committee to Investigate. That is an affidavit. You click on that link, check that out. Also, a notice to all public servants of People's Wisdom Assembly and notice for corrective wisdom from the Supreme Court. That's a real good one to check out. Those I believe are in jot forms, and you can still, I believe, execute those, send those. That's fine. These are just some examples of affidavits. Then it says buy tickets to Anarchapulco, which, I mean, you could do through that link. Actually, what you'd really want to do
even
is,
for next year, it's already live.
You can, yeah, so there is some deals. I don't know if that link actually works for that, but you could buy the replays and watch Anarchapulco replays, which I really suggest to do.
Oh, like the speeches recorded?
Speeches, yep. It's like $150, and it's 5 days of the Anarchapulco. It's, you know, it's like 7 hours a day of content. It's 35 hours of content, really awesome stuff, like David Avocado Wolf. He was probably one of my favorite speakers. Curtis Stone. I was actually on the same day as Curtis Stone. I was on the Sovereign Living Day, which was Thursday, day four of Anarchapulco. But anyways, and then the next one is, it says New Hampshire DYF. I got to message my my internet guy and have him make that New Hampshire DCYF. Affidavit establishing maladministration. So this is the one where Chris Noyes, his affidavit to Sherman Packard, which should be read. This guy, he did some bad things. In fact, I would like to read a part of this affidavit right on the air. But then what we're going to do, as soon as we have the notice to go to Sherman Packard in the jot form, I'm going to put that up on my website. I'm also going to post this stuff on my Twitter. Jay Noone Man Camp is my Twitter handle, and then we will shortly have an affidavit that will be something that you can print up yourself, and you can utilize a boilerplate affidavit that, you know, gives the exhibit, spells it out. Sherman Packard made a mistake. He's probably under, extreme pressure from the parasite, you know, the state, the people who do not want their golden gooses being taken away. Can
He's
you imagine
probably one of them.
What the amount? So basically, many state pension funds will basically collapse. At least one of them will, from what I understand about pension funds. And this is just secondhand information to me. I'm not a forensics auditor or a forensics accountant. Some guys I have talked to who are working on this stuff and looking through the comprehensive annual financial report are like, oh, without the DCYF, family court, you know, Social Security Administration, Title 4D, this pension fund would just pretty much collapse because it relies on all of its money from it, which would either mean it's going to cost taxpayers more, or these judges and a bunch of state employees will no longer have a pension fund, which I'm fine with, too, because they're all thieves as far as I'm concerned. So
we don't owe them anything.
That's correct.
Nothing.
So, and in New Hampshire, this is how we're doing it. This is how we're setting the example, and we don't have to use any violence whatsoever. Now, these guys might retaliate with violence.
I know. I was thinking, what might they do if they lose their precious golden eggs? That's just crazy.
Well, just the threat of them.
I'll tell you, I love that you guys push back on me on this, because the person who used to do that was Ian, but they came and threw him in prison.
Yeah, I've never heard Dave Ridley get so sassy. It was interesting.
So anyways, Dave's a brave man, and yeah. Also Dave's not afraid to get sassy with nobody, because, you know, nobody's, nobody, you could tell him, you know, something he doesn't want to hear, and he's still going to give you a hug when you're done talking to him.
Yeah.
You know?
Nobody loves Dave.
Right.
Nobody loves the hell out of Dave. Dave is a national treasure.
Oh, yeah. I love Dave.
So, and we are very fortunate that we got him here in New Hampshire. So anyways, this, but what happens, what do they do when you start coming after their golden goose, threatening to take it down and stop it? You try to disassemble the committee. You take the chairman off the committee, for example, to investigate this agency. This, we got to understand, what Leah Cushman has done is quite literally the first example in history that I'm aware of that David Jose, who is a much better researcher than me, is very aware of. You guys should really, really check out David Jose and just listen to like one of his rumbles. Just do a rumble, David Jose search, and just listen to one of his things. Now, he's a little too preachy for some people. If you could just, you know, get that. I don't let that bother me. That's fine. But if you can, if that bothers you or upsets you, just ignore it. The guy is awesome. He's really laying the way. He's actually had death threats against him, from what I'm understanding. He has been, and he's really got into it because DCYF messed with him 4 or 5 years ago.
He has kids.
Right. See, most people don't care until their ox gets gored. But if your ox gets gored and you're an addict, like you're addicted to the internet, you're addicted to the television, you're addicted to the sports ball, you just, just really are concerned about your the distractions in your life and the bread and circus, or maybe you're just ill, or maybe you are addicted to hardcore substances like, you know, heroin or alcohol or something, then you don't fight back. You don't care. But the people who aren't going to tolerate it, the family men, you know, and it really helps if you're not divorced. This is why the DCYF and the culture of people in DCYF and the leftist parasite, you know, radical leftist, mentally ill people calling themselves Democrats are anti-family. You know, they support all the anti-family agendas like Black Lives Matter because families are super strong and super resilient, and you're not going to be able to get too far with families. When families are divorced and, you know, things aren't going right, and the lawyers on both sides are incentivizing and encouraging the mother and the father to use the children as essentially, you know, cannon fodder against the other parent, and all this kind of stuff, and a lie about the other parent. They're not paying attention to politicians. They're too busy bickering among themselves. I think that is just so heinous that there are like so many divided families that are fighting amongst themselves, where like, you know, they have the greatest thing worth fighting for, which is their own family, their own children. But yet the system has them fighting against themselves. So this is why this whole system is all tyranny, and it's ripe for collapse. We're going to help it collapse. All we need to do is just, you know, just step to the side and not reach out and not grab it. We can also throw many, many proverbial punches at it with paperwork, with, you know, writing on paper. We don't need to shed any blood. When it comes to bloodshed, first off, when there's blood on the ground, it makes a mess and it stinks really bad. So I don't want to be having to deal with, you know, dead bodies. I don't want my children having to deal with dead bodies or gaping wounds. I don't want my friends and family shedding any blood. And even my enemy is just basically, you know, they're not even my enemy. There are a bunch of people that are suffering from mental illness. There are a bunch of people suffering from cult worship. The cult that they worship is the state. You know, I really feel bad for these mentally ill cultish people. That is really the issue. They're not actually our enemies. In fact, if it wasn't for the state, they'd generally be all right people. They're just in this cult mentality.
Okay, I got to push back on that a little bit, because, you know, the people who put Ian in prison are his enemy. They are my enemy.
I agree with you.
No, Ian wouldn't say that. That's the thing. Like, and I was actually
Ian wouldn't, but he's not allowed to speak anymore.
So one thing about what me and Ian think about the literal people who are most responsible for putting him in jail, the jurors, is that they were highly manipulated, weren't given enough information, and wanted to go home and have Christmas. And then the people who put the most effort into putting him into jail, the prosecutors, I could have ended up like that with just two or three different life decisions. I just don't consider them my enemy. I think that they're
And in Ian's case,
see, I would say that the people least responsible for putting Ian in prison are the jurors, the people who are most responsible for putting him in prison are the people who denied the jurors an education, the people who forced them into the public schools where they could be propagandized for 12 years, the same people who force people into the public schools where they are propagandized into joining the military and giving their lives to make some scumbag rich.
So, coming back around to this here, the one thing I want to get out is, I don't believe I stop me if I already said this, but the next hearing, DCYF investigation hearing, is March 25th. That's a Monday. That would be 2 Mondays from, basically like 10 days from now.
And can people online testify?
Probably no, nah, but you can watch it, stream it live online. You can actually email them. I got to get the email for this.
But if you want to testify,
committee.
You have to end up at the legislative
office
building.
Go there and please go there and speak. Mm-hmm. And even if it didn't happen to you, you know of somebody, you can testify under oath, which is very valuable that you observe this with a friend, with a coworker, with a family member. I would really encourage people to come in there and say, I know this individual who is scared. They will not come here because they are scared. They are so frightened. There is so many people I talk to. They're like, oh, I'm not going to testify against DCYF. They will make my life miserable. Hmm. They are scared. I know people who won't even sign like these affidavits and these notices when I'm trying, I'm encouraging people to sign them. They're like, oh, I'm not putting my name on that. I'm not being made a target. Like all the Russian people in a Free Stater community, none of those guys will sign any of these affidavits because they are they basically know that in Russia, if you put your name on pen to paper and swore under an oath that you did, that the government's doing something bad or wrong, you just got blackbagged.
Not only that, but
Russia.
And anybody who's here that's from another country is kind of here on the invitation of the United States.
That's true too.
I could see them being afraid to do
March
something like
25th.
That.
It is the Legislative Office Building, room 203. So the work session is from 9 a.m. to 11, which you can sit there and just listen. And then the public hearing starts at 11 a.m. And come there and testify and demand to be put under oath. Because your testimony is useless unless it is under oath. And these guys want useless testimony, so nothing gets done as usual. And let's call them out for that. Like, I don't know who this new chair is going to be in this committee, if they're going to be, an establishment goon. I don't know who appoints the new chair, or if there is just going to be a committee of whoever's left, minus the chair. And this will be in Concord. And March 25th, please make it a point to come, do this. This is a first time in history this is actually happening where, actual testimony, sworn testimony, is being brought into a court. The House of Representatives is the general court. It is the court that is going to judge the other branches of government. This is what the House of Representatives' primary purpose to do is checks and balances, make sure that the executive branch and the judicial branch are not violating the people's rights.
So what would be
that
the next
primary
thing? Like, so the one lady on the committee said, oh, well, we're not going to prosecute anybody. Well, what would be the next thing if you wanted to bring charges against someone? Who would have to do that? The committee itself? Or?
Oh, no. So, I don't know if there would be quote-unquote charges. Like, that's really a statutory thing. Maybe, actually. And the statutory laws do apply to the DCYF people and all the judges because they're part of that statutory system. I think some kind of private attorney general citizen is really going to have to do it. But there is a remedy within the legislature to, from what I understand, to defund these agencies, to fire people within the agencies. And another thing that we have to do, and this is a campaign we got to work on, is we have to get every the one thing that's really stupid about New Hampshire legislature is you have to like get a unanimous consent from the legislature in order to subpoena someone to testify. So I want to subpoena two people to testify. I would like to see subpoenaed for this particular committee, and that is Ross McLeod, Melissa Coombs, Colleen Subritz, I forget what the other couple people's name is.
But they all work in DCYF, the the Child Protective Service.
Yeah, Ross McLeod is an attorney that he does DCYF cases, but he's paid by the Attorney General's office, so he's not part of the DCYF budget. He is also probably a participant in the Judicial Pension Fund that gets, that the DCYF is the golden goose for. He meddles in a lot of stuff. He's really not a good guy at all.
Hmm.
And then you have, and the other one I mentioned, Melissa Coombs, is a social worker that, perjured herself a few times in some affidavits.
She's the one that's in the video where she was at your property and you were telling her that, oh, well, this paper doesn't tell me to do anything. And she's just mad. She's gross.
Right. And Ross McLeod's the attorney that submitted this, contempt order to family court, and he knows darn well that he cannot submit that it is essentially has no authority to submit these orders. It is clear maladministration what he's doing, because a year prior to this, J.R. Hull made that very clear to him, J.R. Hull's attorney. In fact, this is going to be part of my testimony on the 25th. I'm going to talk about how J.R. Hull made it very clear to Ross McLeod in an email that you can't put a contempt charge against somebody unless they are named as a contemptor. And the assessment doesn't name the parents as a contemptor, because I had not stepped in any of their jurisdictional traps with DCYF. I've never had any agreement with them. They never, were able to coerce me to contract with them. In fact, I told them I reject your offer to contract with me. So the and then the other one is Colleen Subritz, who is a supervisor on DCYF. And if I got these great emails between her and the chief of police, and she's ill, she's mentally ill. I mean, in the email, she tells the chief of police, hey, you guys can't do this assessment. I know that the court order says that the assessment can be done by the police, but that doesn't mean, what's to be done. Like, they don't even know what they're talking about.
Wow.
And what it all comes down to is they just want the money. It's all a huge money thing.
And children. They want the children.
Well, because they're very valuable. And evil, demonic entities, which, I mean, I'm not saying I believe in them, but these people certainly act like they exist.
Mm-hmm.
The purest energy is of children. So if you can do evil, diabolical thing to children, there's a lot of evil doers out there. There's a lot of this occult worship that uses all kinds of symbolism and numerology and all this crazy stuff that I don't really understand. But you
don't have to believe in it if they do.
The problem is we have these cult people who believe in it. Look at Bohemian Grove.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the videos where you got the guys, that were digging the tunnels under New York City. There's like these videos where these guys are like simulating like beating a child to death that's hanging from a rope.
Wait, it's very those gross. People, ew, that's disgusting. So wait, the people that were digging under the synagogue?
Yes. Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, there was some video where they're like, it's these guys, I don't know, maybe they're all dressed up in costumes with their like, their particular clothing and style that they wear, and their beards and their braids and their curls. And I know a whole bunch of those guys from upstate New York. I think they're all great people. I don't have any feeling like the guys I know like participate in this kind of child sacrifice nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But there's definitely like, a big suggestion out there that they do, that some of them do, that some people do that. But there are people that are, well, how does 800,000 children go missing, 790,000 children go missing in 2021? I don't know how many were recovered. But like, and then you have all, thousands, tens of thousands of children that are missing. Migrant children are coming into the U.S.
Oh, yeah, it makes no sense. Oh, we're gonna allow this family to come over the border. Then we're gonna take their children and put them in cages, and their parents have no idea where they are.
Right, and like this one thing that Trump was doing, the Trump administration was doing that, Biden put a stop to, is when some random dude would come across the border with kids, they would say, "Okay, this is your son. We're gonna do a quick DNA test to see if it's your son." Which, I mean, I'm not really interested in the government harvesting DNA, but boy, on the surface, if you want to like make sure that they're not just trafficking some children that they picked up somewhere,
mm-hmm.
That's like a pretty good way to tell. Like, if I had, my kids, which, a lot of people like, oh, I see a lot of you and your children, you know, that, you know me. But I wouldn't expect for some guy that's like having to deal with hundreds of people a day, that's like a Border Patrol agent, to be able to like make that decision and have a clear conscience. But okay, we're going to, you know, swab a little saliva out of your cheek, a little saliva out of your cheek, you know, the dad's cheek and the kid's cheek. And you guys are going to go hang out here in this cell for, you know, this waiting room for a little while to till this test is done. That seemed kind of reasonable. And you know, I don't like government having that authority or power, but if you're looking to come to this country and get asylum, so that's what the Trump administration was doing. And like, the Trump was, you know, I don't really like Trump. He was just the least worst president of my lifetime. All the presidents are bad. But you know, now they're just, you know, the Biden administration is just letting them come in. And you know, there's all kinds of like conspiracy theories out there about like adrenochrome, which is apparently a real thing, a hormone that's extracted from, you know, children, young children are being tortured. And, you know, if there is a big taste, a big desire for this adrenochrome, or adrenochrome, however you say it, you know, then it would make sense. You would need to harvest a lot of children to do that. And it's getting pretty dangerous for pedophiles in the United States because, well, there's a lot of pushback. And people are really making it a point to watch their kids.
And you don't even have to be an underground, like, Illuminati pedophile. If you just become a foster parent who the DCYF hands you over kids to all the time, and then you are raping them at a high rate, because a bunch of the foster parents are doing that, not that all of them are.
Yeah, that's definitely a big cause of action. And even, like, you know, today, you know, traveling into the studio, I was listening to some local radio, and it was like NPR or some garbage, and they were saying, and they were interviewing all these people about how the biggest problem that we have in America is racism. And it's like, racism isn't even an issue. The fact that you can be called a racist because, you know, you don't agree with Obamacare, or you can be called a racist because you wouldn't like make babies with someone who's not your same race, you know, and then you're compared to Hitler, who might have actually been a racist if he actually did what history says he did. I don't know. I wasn't there, and history is pretty much all a lie. But the term racism has basically doesn't mean anything anymore because it's overused and abused, and it basically has no more value because they've, you know, destroyed the definition of it. But the real problem we have is the child trafficking. Like you have the radical left, you know, and left media like poo-pooing that, you know, documentary Save the Children, you know, talking about all of the child trafficking, and 80 some odd percent of the children that are trafficked in the United States come from the Child Protection Service industrial complex. They are in that system. And when Child Protection Services has a child that runs away or gets away or goes missing, they don't report runaways. So it's, and everything's sealed. That's another one of these things with the family court. The fact that they're sealing all of this stuff, it's not a court of record. And the people are guaranteed a court of record. Ian Freeman should be exonerated from his charges. That should all be dropped because he was never brought before a court of record, and he has a right to court of record. That court never had due process of law. That prosecutor never had standing to begin with.
603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up. Don't go anywhere. It's Free Talk Live, and you can call 603-283-6160 to bring up whatever is on your mind.
We'd like to invite you to visit freekeen.com. Freekeen.com features audio, video, and blogs chronicling the transition to a voluntary society. Freekeen.com also has comments and discussion forums so you can be heard. Freekeen.com.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. It's free. It's talk radio, sorry. That you can control. Free Talk Live. 603-283-6160. That's the number you can call to bring up whatever is on your mind. 603-283-6160. And Free Talk Live is brought to you by ForkFest, happening June 13th through the 16th at Rogers Campground in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. ForkFest is a fork of the Porcupine Freedom Festival. Porkfest is decentralized, so there is no ticket cost and no one is in charge. For more information and to connect with other attendees, you can visit the unofficial website, forkfest.party. That's forkfest.party. And with you in the studio tonight and remotely, you've got me, Bonnie.
Jay Noon.
And nobody. And reminding you that the fee to get on the next blockchain, the next block on the blockchain, the BTC blockchain, is $6.
Wow.
If you wanna make transfers, if you wanna end the system that we have today, you're not gonna do it with $6 fees. Bitcoin is BCH.
Bitcoin Cash, right. I just saw that Bitcoin went up to 72,000. I think that's another record. It's been hitting past its records recently. That's interesting to people. I mean, it's nice when it goes up to me, but ultimately I think the most important thing about cryptocurrency is being able to use something that is sound that is not the US dollar, and that is defunding its wars. I don't like to give money. I don't like to give them a tip for killing people in the Middle East. But in other international news, German police are raiding people, like raiding their houses, who are suspected of posting misogynistic hate speech online. Can you imagine? You post some, even if it is actual misogynistic, hateful speech online, and the cops raid your house. That's absolutely terrible and crazy.
That's, and the injustice of the whole gender thing is so manifest in that there, men and women are not the same. There are differences between them. They feel comfortable in different circumstances. And, you know, men who are decent men, act a little bit differently when women are around. They're a little bit quieter. They're a little bit more polite. They're a little bit more reserved because it helps to make women comfortable. Well, what they've done with the so-called equality in employment is they have declared that every workplace in America must be comfortable for women, which means that no workplace in America must be comfortable for men. Okay? And that is absolutely absurd.
And also, you know, men used to protect women. Like,
yes.
There's videos of women being assaulted, like in subway trains. There is, I guess, some... I didn't see this video, but certainly there's something about some woman was getting raped, I guess. And like people are just, you know, looking at their iPhone. There's like actual, like, you know, what it looks like a man might just be a, you know, a city at soy boy that, you know, isn't going to do nothing about it. But like there's literally cases where women are being assaulted and nobody's doing nothing about it because the men are just, you know, they're afraid to even try to, you know, defend women. And there's this whole thing with culture going on where, like, you know, like if you open up a door for a woman, they get all upset at you sometimes for opening the door up for them. Like,
I don't know if that's the same problem. I would say that the men don't want to protect the woman in that case because they're afraid they'll get beat up. It's like when you're in a city and you just like, I just am minding my own business. I don't care what you're doing type thing, which is also like a societal problem. But I'd say those are two different problems. It's not like the woman's going to get mad at him for
stopping
her rape.
I think there's a connection, though, because there is a segment of women, the radical feminist, the third wave feminist, that is that makes it very clear that she hates me for being a man. The fact that I am a man is an offense to her. The fact that I will not be a woman, that I cannot be a woman, is offensive to her. My existence offends her. And when I see a person like that in danger, I have absolutely no desire to defend her.
So how were you able to ascertain that she was that way just because you saw her on the subway getting raped? See, this is the exact same problem as, like, there aren't, not every black person, not every Mexican person or whatever is walking around thinking, every white person I see is racist. But there are tons of them, and they'll admit it on the internet. So it's not like I'm making it up. They admit, like, oh, every time I go out in public, I just know all white people are racist. It's like slowly, like, people will accidentally say things in front of me sometimes. Because, like, in San Antonio, I was a minority being white. There are more Hispanic people than white people there. So sometimes people would, like, my boyfriend at the time's little sister one time said, like, look at all the white people, just kind of forgetting I was white. So yeah, there are definitely people that walk around assuming every person of some race is against them. And I think that you are kind of doing the same thing by assuming all women are this third wave feminist and would hate you if you helped her not be raped anymore.
I don't assume that all women are of that description at all. And frankly, there have been many times that I have stepped into to help somebody or to protect somebody. But the thing is, we're no longer in a high trust society where you can just assume that people generally have goodwill for you. And if I don't believe that you have goodwill for me, then the chances of my putting my life on the line to defend you are slim.
I've just got to say, the chances that that soy boy was thinking like that and not just, oh, I don't want to stick my neck out. I don't want to, other people to think weirdly of me, and I don't want to be brave right now because he's a soy boy, and that's literally what the definition is probably more likely what was going on.
And you know, if it's a guy riding on a subway, for example, in like Manhattan or Baltimore or Chicago or L.A., he's probably a classic soy boy. You know, he, I mean, if he was a real man, he'd be probably driving his own car or truck or something. He wouldn't be in the city. He'd probably be in rural America, not like, you know, I mean, and, you know, if he's, you know, and the other thing, too, is, you know, you got to think you're in there. How many of that, you know, rapist buddies are in there, or how many people are going to defend him?
Yeah.
And, you know, and the other thing, too, is you got like that Kyle Penny. He's a Marine. And he, you know who he is?
No.
He was the guy who subdued some madman on the subway. I guess he had smacked a couple of people and punched somebody, and he was going crazy saying how he's going to kill everybody. And this guy had like a major rap sheet, and he was some, you know, crackhead homeless guy, probably on welfare. That'd be interesting. And Daniel Penny subdued him, and he died while he was subduing him. And the guy had like a notorious rap sheet, and now this Daniel Penny guy is being charged with first degree murder for subduing a violent madman.
That's
what happens
sad.
In New York.
It's definitely self-defense.
Right. It was absolutely self-defense, and he was defending others.
I would just never step foot in New York City, honestly. Sometimes I think about it, like a friend is like, oh, you're not that far from New York. I'm not that far. Well, let's drive there and like go shopping. And that does seem almost like tempting, but just being putting myself in that jurisdiction is terrifying.
Yeah, I don't see anything tempting about why. First off, why would you shop in New York City? It is the most expensive place to get things. It is the most dangerous place to do anything. You can't defend yourself. This knife I have on my side right here, this knife has a blade, you know, that is longer than, you know, like this is an illegal knife in New York City.
Whoa.
And it's a heavy duty work knife is what it is. And it's illegal in New York City. And the fact that I wear it to where you can see it, it would be considered brandishing. I had a guy actually when I was in Miami, who was from New York City, talk to me about how this knife I would be going to jail for basically walking down the street with this knife and it's strapped in its sheath the way I carry it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, most of the time I'm pulling it out to like cut bales of hay open and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, but that's what the problem in New York City is, like this is like a felony there.
That is a problem. This piece of metal. So crazy.
That's the thing I hate most about not being a human is that I don't have a right to keep and bear arms. I don't have a right to defend myself. I don't even exist because I'm a felon. I have no rights, no liberty. I exist because nobody has troubled themselves to kill me yet.
Mm. Yeah, that thing that doesn't have rights is not your flesh and blood man. It is the certificated person that they created for you that you... that they have presumed that you've willingly and knowingly operated under, you know, the all capital letters name, but it's definitely a discussion for a different day.
Well, there are some really terrible free speech violations going on in Germany. Not that I necessarily think the Germans claim that they have free speech. Everybody has the same rights as Jay is kind of alluding to there. But I think that even if you're a misogynistic, hateful person, I think you have the right to talk about it online, but apparently not in Germany because the police are raiding those people's houses. It says German law enforcement, and this is from abcnews.go.com. German law enforcement authorities on Thursday carried out raids across Germany against people suspected of posting misogynistic hate speech on the internet as part of a coordinated push to shine the spotlight on online violence against women. Wow, okay. That's a loaded term right there. So they want to say that speaking online is violence against women.
What is online violence? I've never seen an online boxing match.
Yeah.
There's no online MMA. And the reason is because online violence is impossible.
Yeah, that's absolutely ridiculous. That it's like those people that say that they felt like they were raped because their sim, or whatever you would call it, on an AI game was like touched inappropriately, like by a male sim. I don't know if you'd call it a sim.
As a person who has been sexually assaulted when I was a child, let me tell you that what you experience online when something you don't like happens is absolutely nothing like that experience.
Jesus, like it's the idea that people come out with that type of thought process just for kind of like for attention. They feel exactly like they were raped because their online character was touched. It should be offensive to anyone who's been actually sexually assaulted. It's ridiculous. It's like watering down the conversation.
Just like what racism has been watered down so much, it doesn't mean anything anymore.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. Police raided homes and interrogated 45 suspects in 11 states early Thursday. I guess there are states in Germany. I didn't know that. None of the suspects were detained. Germany's Federal Criminal Police Office said in a statement, another 37 suspects were already searched and interrogated in previous weeks and months. Wow, so this is crazy. 37 plus 45 of them. That's a lot of people. The raids were, if only we had TJ here to add that for me. The raids were part of a Combating Misogyny on the Internet Day of Action, which comes one day before International Women's Day. Wow, that's so gross.
37 plus 25 is 62.
Oh, it's 45, so I guess 82. 82 people's houses were raided, and it points out that they weren't put into or detained, but who cares? They had their homes raided. That's bad enough. I just really want to know what kind of posts there were. I wonder if it will give us any examples, because what could possibly be worth raiding someone's house that was posted on Twitter or something like that? I just can't.
Running an anarchist talk show is obviously enough to get your house raided, because it happened to us 3 times and counting.
Yes, it does seem like that is at least a factor there. Like the week before they raided in 2016, claiming that they had proof that somebody visited a child porn website. Mark Edge was breaking the story that the FBI was adding servers to the Playpen website, which was a child porn website, adding servers and more content and making the website work faster and be larger. The FBI was doing that in the name of combating child porn. And Mark Edge was pointing out how ridiculous and disgusting that is. And then the week later, they raided the house claiming that somebody had visited that very website. That's just too much of a coincidence. It's ridiculous. So yeah, I do think that it's important that there is Free Talk Live. It's the only Liberty talk radio show in the nation. And also the only show I know of where anybody can get in on the air. Oh, speaking of which, it looks like we do have a call. Sarah in New Mexico. Sarah, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
I just want to say that I'm so excited that our city has a taxi-like service provided for free for the bus service. I was just amazed. I heard...
Is it free or does somebody pay for it? Are these volunteers?
Well, the community pays for it, comes from our tax dollars, but the riders, it's for free.
Okay, so people who don't want the service are forced to pay for it so that the people who do want the service don't have to.
Well, it's for people that, what it is that it's for areas where it's not, they don't have enough ridership where they have to have a full every hour a service, but there's people that want a grocery shop. They want to go to downtown. So it's for a certain area.
And they want to do that at somebody else's expense.
I'm a communist, so I'm all for this.
Yes, you want to live, you want me to be forced to work more so you don't have to work at all. That's what a communist is.
Lied. Oh, yeah. She
what
said
about
it was free.
Shoes are on your feet. How come you, if you were to live on this west side remote area and then your car broke down, you don't have enough money for a car, don't you want a free bus service that takes you there? Or do you
want to
ride a
bike? What I want is I want to situate myself in such a way that I can take care of myself. I do not want to situate myself in a remote place and then force other people to bear the cost of my existence.
Well, yeah, actually, this area, I used to live in this area, North Valley area, where they did have a bus service every hour. There are two bus services. And what it is that it's close enough to the city where there's people that want to ride the service, but it's not enough to have a full service line. And when we had a low drivership, we don't have drivers, they would not show up at all. So I think this is really a wonderful service, and I think you could call or do it on the computer. They don't force you to use a computer. So this is a lot of the elderly, low-income people that need all this. So what are you so against people that are working but don't make a lot of money getting some kind of help? Why are you so against that?
What I'm against is people being taxed into poverty so that people can be provided a service that is worth less than to the people who receive it than it costs to provide that service. Profit is the difference between the value of what you created and the value you destroyed in creating the new value. When you create a finished product, you destroy raw materials. If the raw materials were worse, hey, shut up. If the raw materials are worth that you destroyed are worth more than the product that you created, then you are not in the process of creation. You are in the process of destruction.
Well, I think it's more. This saves more money in the long run because they only pick up people that need it. If there's only three people need three right that wet day to go to the grocery store downtown instead of running that route all day long, five times in the morning, five five routes looping and then pick up three people.
It steals less than the other way.
The buses are also run at the cost of unwilling slaves. So the fact that, the question isn't, should we do it in a way that requires the slaves to work less or requires the slaves to work more? The question is, should we be enslaving people in the first place? And a taxpayer is nothing but a part-time slave.
Well, you know what, Raymond, we would have used this service if we still lived there. We were thinking about going to these areas. You know what, he worked all of his life, paid taxes. Now he's 74, needs this taxi service, free service. So what's so wrong about that? People pay into all of this. All these people that are slaving that pay into this, when they need help, they get the help they need, and they don't charge them anything. You know, you're so mean about it.
Well, the proper answer is that you should pay directly for the things that you want instead of letting the kleptocrats steal your money and then counting on the kleptocrats to take care of you, because the kleptocrats don't care if you live or if you die. And as whenever you count on a government service, you are going to be paying more than you should pay, and you are going to get less than you should get, because it is run by kleptocrats and kleptocrats live by theft.
Well, thank you for the call, Sarah. That's the bumper music, Sarah. Thank you for the call, and you can continue the fight another night. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up. Don't go anywhere. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. Is the phone number here. That's 603-283-6160. Are you tired of the oppressive rules and moderation of the big tech social media sites? Our Mastodon server at social.freetalklive.com can set you free. Mastodon is free, open source, decentralized, and federated. Multiple apps are available for iOS, Android, Windows, Mac, and Linux. social.freetalklive.com. And with you on the show tonight, you've got me, Bonnie.
Jay Noon.
Uh-oh. Did we lose him?
And nobody somewhere.
And nobody. Oh, sorry. I keep my microphone muted most of the time, so if I'm not Johnny on the spot with the dialogue box, it takes me a second to find it.
Okay. All right. Well, in the last segment, we were talking about German citizens having their homes raided because they said something mean online. And it's being billed as shining a spotlight on online violence against women. And I have yet to see an example of any of this on this article, so not much more to say about it, but it's pretty, I want to say hilarious, but also it's really worrying and scary. Like, of course, people think that, oh, it can never happen here. That's just something happening in tyrannical other countries. But most of the time, whatever one government sees, they monkey do in other countries. They're like, oh, that's a way to get more power.
Yeah, like Germany, all the European Union, Australia, New Zealand, the United States, Canada. They're basically all following the same, stuff. And, the United States, the only difference is you have a very heavily armed population. But like you still in New York City, you see it's just gotten radical because the population is not armed, and there's people in New York City who are left and right are being sentenced to all kinds of non-crime I've heard that there's people in the U.S. that are going to jail for producing memes and, you know, speech on the internet. But it's definitely been a thing in the U.K. and Germany. There's actually a family several months ago, the Biden administration was deporting them back to Germany. And they've been here for 15 years, and they seek political asylum here in the U.S. because they're homeschoolers.
Hmm.
And in Germany, you can't homeschool. And I guess his family
sent them back.
I don't know if they got sent back. They were appealing it, but basically, a couple of their kids were born here. But they don't, you know, just like, you know, Trump was, you know, quoted as saying like Haiti and Venezuela. No, Haiti and Honduras were S-hole nations.
Oh, Trump, yeah.
And then, you know, the left came out, you know, it's like, oh, Haiti's so awesome. I guess, you know, one of these commentators, I forget his name, Colbert or something, went down to Haiti and did this whole puff piece on Haiti. And, you know,
Now there's cannibalism
going on there. And I mean, cannibalism will probably happen here in the cities. You'll probably get that in New York City, especially the people who can't leave because, you know, they've just been degenerated so much by the welfare system and the whole city life that they don't even think they can leave. You know, they're
cannibalism and human sacrifice are already taking place in the United States. They happen through the government. When you consent to one of your neighbors being robbed to pay so that you can eat, that's cannibalism. That's human sacrifice. You're offering your neighbor as a human sacrifice so you can eat.
Sounds like Sarah. So
basically that's by putting your kids in public school. I tell people all the time, if you send your kids to public school, you're engaging in an act of violence against all landowners because, you know, they have to pay for that.
Yep, through property taxes. But it is a call-in talk radio show, and we have David, also from New Mexico, on the line. David, what's on your mind?
Horses.
Okay, what about horses?
I want to, first of all, I know had a friend, girl, my hot German girlfriend online. We would talk every day. She, was dealing with all the stuff you're talking about in Germany and to the point where she was going to leave the country and go to Czech Republic. But anyway, horses, Jay, under the category of horses that are not just pets, like most horses are, you see them in behind people's fences and they're never, ever, ever, ever ridden. But to have some working horses that actually do stuff, if a person, you know, I had horses when I was a kid, but I've wanted them all my life and I haven't ever gotten around to it, but I might. But first of all, a breeding strategy. I mean, I lived on a farm. We had hundreds of cattle and hogs, and you know, I know how to run that breeding strategy. But if you're talking about having you know, some decent dollar horses, you know, that you're gonna to help offset your costs, you're going to have a small little breeding program and try to sell for $2,000, $4,000, $6,000, $8,000 a piece after you've trained them, ridden them for whatever, you know, 3-4 years. And then put them up for sale one by one by one. You know, you got mares and you got studs, and you either own the stud or you take the mares to a stud or you use the artificial insemination. What's a good breeding program for if you got a half a dozen? Say you got half a dozen mares plus or minus, and you either have your own stud or you don't. What would you do?
I wouldn't do any of that.
First of all, tell me why.
I just don't see how it can make any money. Now, if you have a way to support this.
Wait a minute. The goal is not to make money. The goal is to have the horses.
Okay.
And the breeding is just to offset some expenses.
So I think you got to be careful not to flood your market, breed too many horses. You know, you don't want it raining horses. And there's a song by Corblund and the Hurt and Albertans called "Raining Horses." You should listen to that.
Oh, I thought you were going
to
say
I've been listening to I've listened to Corblund for like the last 20 years.
Nice. Anyways, the breeding program is really, really difficult. And the thing is you can just go buy yearlings for like way cheaper than you can breed them. Way cheaper.
Even quality athletic animals.
Yep, I believe so. And so, if like breeding is a passion for you, and you can support it, and you have the land, I don't know what if you're in an area like where you have irrigation.
It's open range here.
Okay. Well, I don't. So you're not watering open range. I don't know how much grass grows, how much hay you got to buy. You got to put a lot of good quality hay through brood mares and lactating mares. So hay like that quality alfalfa is like $600 a ton right now, from what I understand in Texas and Colorado. I don't know what it is in New Mexico.
Same.
Right. So it's expensive. So if you can graze your stock on ground that you can water, because you have irrigation rights there, or I don't know really how that works there, then it's a little more feasible. This is going to be a black hole you're going to throw a lot of money at. I've seen a lot of guys try to get into this like passion, and they end up, you know, feeding like, you know, 7-8, you know, yearlings, and then they have, you know, 2-year-old colts or fillies, and then they got the 3-year-old horses that are that are half trained, and the 4-year-old horses that are kind of made, and they're having a hard time selling them because they got too much into it. Now,
got it.
I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. One of the things I want to do when my kids are a little older is I am going to buy a couple of weanling Morgan horses. I'm going to buy some from some guys in Vermont that I kind of know that are breeders. I'm going to buy some nice yearlings. I'm probably going to pay good money for them, but I'm able to trade these guys in other considerations, so it'll work out okay.
What kind of price range are you talking about for, like I said, a quality athletic animal, not paying for somebody else to do all the training?
Yeah, this
just a
weanling. So I'm going to buy a pair of weanling colts. And I'm going to keep them studs for a little while, keep them, you know, intact. I'm not going to geld them until a little later in life because I want them to be a little muscly, a little beefy. We're going to work with them on the ground, and then I'm going to send them to an Amish guy for a spring, probably when they're like 2 or 3 years old, to really groundbreak them well, teach them how to drive. It's kind of like letting a farmer borrow your tractor. And so every time that we've sent like some of these kind of draft horses or horses we want to drive and do like logging or any kind of like, you know, ground, you know, pulling work with or driving work, you send them to an Amish guy for 2 months, and they really come back just made. And then because I want to teach my kids to work with horses, but not just riding them, you know, we'll skid logs with them, we'll maybe pull a sap tender or a maple syrup if we ever get into that, but you know, pull the stone boat around the farm. I just want my kids to like get some brain development from that. Now, cost. I can tell you, you can go to this auction in New Holland, Pennsylvania, and you can buy these kind of, you know, Morgan type, Morgan cross. I kind of have a little, I like Morgans because they're light and they're good dual purpose. They're not like heavy drafts. They don't break down easy. You can buy these things at auction anywhere, depending on what's going on. Like if it's fall, you can buy them a couple years old and broke. For, you know, they'll bring as cheap as $1,200-$1,300. They'll bring as much as $4,000 or $5,000. It sort of depends on the day at the auction. I will expect to pay like somewhere around $2,500 to like $3,500 for like a really nice yearling from a good farm, a good breeder. These guys in Vermont that I'm a little familiar with, they kind of have like a high-end product. They're horses that are, they've been selling them for years. They're well-known. You can go kind of any direction you want with them. You can make like Western horses out of these. You can go ride in English. You can go do dressage. And they're really like the best trail riding horses because they're Morgans. They're like 14-3. Hands, right. So like they're real easy to get on and off. They're the kind of horse that like you can be cantering down a trail and swoop down and grab your buddy's hat that fell off in front of you and just keep on going, you know.
A lot of guys out west like to use Morgans for their pack trips in the mountains.
Yep. So you're not going to take a Morgan horse and go team roping with them and, you know, hang on to like a 800-900 pound steer. You're not going to calf rope with them. you know, you could calf rope with them, but you're going to, you know, you can hurt them too by, because they have a lot of heart and you can overwork them. But it's all different. This horse business is really difficult. And, you know, the thing is, you know, 100 years ago, poor people had horses and rich people had cars and tractors. Today, you know, poor people don't have a car or a tractor and they don't have horses, and only rich people have horses. And the cheap horse market is very, very erratic. If we're going into an economic downturn, it's hard to sell the cheap horses. And then it's really, really hard to get in the expensive horse market. It's easier to sell a horse for $100,000.
Are we ever going to be in an economic upturn ever again?
Yeah, I'm sure we will.
I've heard some people say that they don't think the housing market will ever burst anymore this time.
You don't think it'll fall anymore? It might not with all the migrants coming in, and I'm sure the government's going to give a whole bunch of money to the migrants to buy houses or whatever. But I mean, there's all kinds of variables there. But, you know, the thing is, and to get into that niche market of selling, and it's basically a parasite class, you got to sell $100,000 horses to and stuff. You know, it's very difficult. But if it's a passion and you have like two mares and you have a veterinarian come and AI them, and you just keep the operation small to where, like, if you can't get them sold and you got to feed these things, and I wouldn't try to get too big into it at once. But if you have a community of like people who are like really into prepping, maybe, and you wanted to maybe breed some horses and maybe do some workshops on how to, like, you know, utilize your horse as like the ultimate, because a horse is the ultimate EMP proof vehicle. If it's you know, grid down situation and there's no fuel and there's no anything, I mean, that horse is going to be super valuable. Especially if you know how to use the horse and you practice with the horse. So if you were looking to sell like to that kind of clientele, that might be a thing. You know, you got some folks with some money, but there's also plenty of people out there sort of doing what you're, well, not really. Cause actually a lot of the breeders I know, they've just kind of, they're getting old and their kids aren't into it. It's kind of like farmers, and it is a lost art. Same thing with horseshoeing. My brother's a professional farrier. And he gets calls every single day from people basically wanting his services, and he turns them down because he has so much work. He actually has more work than he wants to do. And my brother, who is Josh Noon, joshnoon.com is his website. You should check him out. He's a really good musician. Hoofsupport.com is his horseshoeing website. And he has three or four apprentices working for him pretty much all the time, and he keeps on churning out horseshoers himself. And he's got like 10 or 12 people now that have worked under him in like the past 10, well, maybe even 5 years, and they all got tons of work. So the wealthy people are going to have the horses. The crazy women, and it isn't just women, men too, that need the horses for the mental stability, which a horse is cheaper than, you know, a psychiatrist. If you're emotionally unstable, horses really provide a lot of stability for emotionally unstable people at a relatively low cost. You know, they're going to have their horses, and whether they're a pasture pup or they're being used every day, they need their feet maintained. So that's like another expense you're going to have. You're either going to have to learn how to shoe your own horses. If you have brood mares, you don't really need to shoe them. If you're not in a rocky area, they don't really need shoes. And especially if they're like Morgans, they got such good feet anyways. Think about the kind of clientele you're going to want to deal with too, you know, for your finished product. You know, cause the really wealthy, you know, lawyer's wives, the dressage queens, they're very difficult. Do you know what a dressage queen uses for birth control, David?
Her personality.
That's right.
That's funny. Well, thank you for the call, David. I don't really know anything about horses, so I don't really have anything to say about it. I feel like you've gotten all your horse questions out from Jay by now. It's not really like a horse talk live type show.
And David can reach out to me directly, jay@jnoon.com, and, you know, if he wants to. But, like, I wouldn't recommend getting in that business right now.
Well,
the people who are most afraid of getting pregnant, though, will use their personality as their primary birth control, but in order to be safe, they'll use their looks as a second line of defense.
Some of those dressage queens are pretty hot. Actually, a lot of them are.
But well, then there are the other ones.
One reason that I asked if you guys think that the... wow, this isn't even a full article. That's really annoying. One reason that I asked if you guys thought that the inflation was, or the economy was going to recover at all, is because right now the government is considering putting in a bill that would quote unquote end shrinkflation. I couldn't get that word out of my mouth.
So it means we're going to have a lot more of it if right. This bill goes through.
So do you guys know what shrinkflation is?
Yeah, it's basically when instead of raising the price of something, somebody cuts the size of the product instead.
Right. So there's no more half gallons of ice cream. They're all, 40 something ounces or 50 something. So originally it was 64 ounce for a half gallon of ice cream, if I'm doing my math right, and it's less.
But the price stays the same.
Or it goes up a little more, but yes.
Yep. So I think that's pretty freaking stupid. This from NBCBoston.com, it says, shrinkflation is hurting consumers at the grocery store. A new bill aims to stop it. And it's just, it's another example of the hundreds of examples of government trying to, quote unquote, fix a problem that they're actually going to make things worse, like you guys said. And also, they're just not actually striking at the root. Not that I want the government to strike at the root, but... the root cause.
The government is the root.
Exactly.
I'd love it if they attacked themselves.
That would be great if they took themselves out of the business of inflating money. Because that's the whole reason that shrinkflation exists. It's a company or a business that produces products trying to keep their products on the shelves while the money is being inflated.
And chances are the reason they're doing shrinkflation instead of just letting inflation do what it normally does is because the Democrats will threaten them over that, too.
And
Democrats will say, we're going to print more money, but you have to provide the same amount of stuff in exchange for the money that is now worthless. Because they reserve the right to steal from you. They are kleptocrats.
And the thing with food in the United States and in Canada, I don't know about Australia and Europe so much, but definitely United States and Canada, it is so heavily government subsidized, all the garbage food. So if you want to know the real price of like food, go to like a co-op, like Monadnock Co-op we have here. We've got a couple of these co-op stores.
Yeah,
in
it
New
is
Hampshire.
Way more expensive there, but...
Yeah, like the steak's
pretty
like
nice.
$26 a pound.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's basically what a farmer needs to get out of a porterhouse steak to... Even the slaughterhouse that I go to, Adams Farm in Athol, Mass., they have a retail store. Their porterhouse steaks are $22.50 a pound, which is like, I think, the best cut. And they're, you know... And they're pretty inexpensive on their bacon, but they do process a lot of hogs. They sell a lot of pork, and actually hogs are really cheap right now, on the like open commercial market. But the real cost of food is not seen by the average consumer
because the farmers are getting so subsidized. They're allowed to make it cheaper.
Like beef, for example, the beef subsidy is insane.
Mm-hmm.
It basically works out, depending on how you crunch numbers and what numbers you use. I have a friend that did this research on it, that in 2020, I believe it was, the U.S. government subsidy on just beef worked out to be somewhere between $29 and $40-something per pound of beef that got sold at the store. So when you see your 10-pound tube of, you know, the worst possible hamburger you could probably buy. Maybe McDonald's is even worse. Actually, the worst hamburger you can get is from Taco Bell.
Hmm.
Because all the Taco Bell stuff is basically, from what I understand, and the guys at the slaughterhouse have told me, and these beef buyers have told me, that when it gets rejected because it has E. coli, it goes back to these processing plants, and they buy it really inexpensively, and they just cook it.
Whoa.
And then they sell it to, like, Taco Bell.
Ew.
and other fast food places as pre-cooked. And actually, a lot of that pre-cooked meat, this is why I was I don't like tacos. Mm-hmm. Like anything taco seasoned, they got to season the heck out of it, because that taco meat is generally something that had been cooked multiple times and heated up. But they steam it or something to kill off the E. coli bacteria. And then a lot of it gets served in schools and prisons. And Taco Bell buys it, for example.
Wow. I thought you were going to just mention the filler, because that's another problem with Taco Bell. A lot of it is just not actually beef. There's a bunch of filler in that. I don't remember what it's made of right now.
So anyways, the thing with the Americans don't get is that, like, a box of cereal, for example, like, I was in the grocery store the other day, and you can buy, like, cereal for $4.99 a box, $3.99 a box. And for the input, what it takes to grow that crop, to process that crop, to package that product, to, you know, make the boxes, put it in a bag, you know, it's all automated, and it's like done like pretty inexpensively, because like General Mills and all these companies are, you know, have these massive assembly lines of stuff. That's expensive and it's labor intensive. And I don't think money printing and government subsidization of the food is going to be able to keep up with inflation. And there's nothing you're going to be able to do about it. And I really want to see all these government subsidies stop, because food is so darn cheap. And if all the subsidies stopped, you wouldn't have cheap canola seed oil foods, because that stuff is actually pretty expensive. And what would happen is we'd go back to raising the kind of pigs I'm going to start raising next year, which are going to be more heirloom pigs, like the Tamworth pig that has a lot of fat on it. Because before, the seed oils, everybody fried and used for cooking grease pig lard. Mm-hmm. And pig lard doesn't cause you all the health issues that seed oil cause.
It's been Free Talk Live. Thanks for listening. We'll be back on tomorrow and live Saturday. You can go to freetalklive.com for more. You can go to jnoon.com to check out the affidavits he was telling you about. Peace.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the Realtor Mark Warden.
Now you can learn more about the awesome things happening here in New Hampshire in our march toward liberty in our lifetime. Our friends at Porcupine Real Estate are hosting a series of webinars to educate you on the expanded freedoms enjoyed by New Hampshire citizens. Reserve your seat today at move.freetalklive.com. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, and political freedom victories. They also have a couple on best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing. These webinars are super helpful and free to attend once you've registered at move.freetalklive.com. Visit their YouTube channel, Porcupine Real Estate, for videos from past presentations, and sign up for upcoming webinars for free at move.freetalklive.com.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.